17. Okay, here's another. That's two more. Jonathan and Rachel, right?
That's right.
Okay. Yeah. You remember 2 weeks ago, and it's not a big thing. Somebody's coming in. I was just wondering if it's Mo, but I don't see. Mo brought up the fact that, yeah, that's them. Peter, surname, or Simon, surname Peter. We were talking about that. I've got a word over there on the board. Anyway, we made an assignment to find out what does surname mean. It wasn't a big deal, but last week I completely forgot it. And Gail reminded me last week afterwards. That looks like Mo. Hi, Mo.
You know Mo.
You know Mo. We were just talking about as you came in that we forgot our assignment last week to find out what the surname means. And you remember talking about it 2 weeks ago. Kelly, do you have your hand up?
Well, Maggie was here that day, and she leaned forward to cut you a little bit. She came up with a different word. It was eponymo, like a verb that you can use.
Yeah. I guess it's over here. I know you can't see this probably, Valina, but I didn't want to get it out just for that one thing. But we were wondering, does a surname in English, or in Greek, I guess would be the way to say it, mean the same thing that it does in English? A surname in English, it means your last name. The word is epikaleo. Epi mean upon, and kaleo means to call. That's all it means. And so, Simon, I called you Peter. Now, was that a surname in our definition? I couldn't find anything that would indicate that. Maybe it was. The latter part of it, kaleo, can you hear call in that? You knew some Greek and didn't know it, huh? Okay. There's several. Oh, I'll just mention this. Everyone in Acts, everyone who calls upon this name, that's the same word, shall be saved. In Acts 12, talks about John, whose other name is Mark. That's the way some versions are translated, or also called Mark. Anyway, little Greek exercise there. Transfiguration of Jesus. As I said, that slide there is very light, and maybe that's best because we don't really know what it looked like up there on the mountain. By the way, this is when Jesus went up into the mountain with what three? We got this question here somewhere. What three guys did he take with him? Peter, James, and John. And what mountain was it? We don't know for sure. There is two mountains that it's a possibility. One is Mount Tabor. You look on your map, Mount Tabor's down there in Galilee. Not too far from Nazareth, not too far from Nain. That's Mount Tabor. It's not as high as Mount Hermon. In fact, Mount Tabor would probably be like a little mountain out here, about as high as it would be. Mount Hermon is the other possibility. That'd be my choice, but like I say, we don't know exactly. He is up there in Galilee. Mount Hermon is not very far from the northern end of Galilee. Mount Hermon is the famous mountain where cedar trees grew, still do. Probably where David and Solomon had the men to go get the cedar for the temple. It is 9,000 something feet. Usually has snow on it, depending on how much snow it gets, just like Baker does around here. So, a mountain high apart. The aim of this lesson, it says, is the significance of the bodily transfiguration of Jesus. What is the significance of that? Let's see if we can understand that by the time we get through with our lesson. The account, as I said, is found in Matthew 17, Mark 9, and Luke 9. And the first question we've already answered, who went, and I go through these review questions simply because they're so easy most of the time, simply because maybe it will stir up some thoughts and some questions and comments. Who went with Jesus to the mountain? Peter, James, and John. Were any of these guys brothers? James and John were brothers. Peter was not their brother. I mean, talking about physical brothers, if you want need that. What did Jesus' companions do? I wasn't sure about this. Okay. it's hard for them to stay awake, but they did. I took another kind of, and maybe this is too far, but I took another jaunt also. It's what they saw. And you remember what they saw when they went up there with Jesus? They saw a bright light. Is that what I heard? A bolt of... Oh, Moses and Elijah. Okay. Yes, that's right. what happened to Jesus while he was praying there? Jesus went up there and he went up to pray. And Moses and Elijah appeared to them, and Peter, James, and John saw that. Mo? Okay. So his garments and his face changed. In what way? Very bright light. And in that slide up there, you can barely see Jesus is supposed to be represented there in the middle. So there was a change of fashion and appearance in the face of Jesus. Did it say what the bright light looked like? Like lightning? So back there? I thought someone said, I can't hear you if you don't speak up. Like the sun? Is that what one version said? That would be difficult to look at if it's bright as the sun or bright as a flash of lightning. Lightning happens so fast, if you see a bolt of it anyway, it doesn't even give you time to look at it hardly. But it would be as hard on your eyes almost if you looked at a bolt of lightning as it would be to the sun. So there's a brilliance there that they see. Patrick? All right. That's a good example of the fashioning of a person. Patrick points out when Moses came down from the mountain, having received the commandments of God, his face shone so brightly that they put a veil across his face. Paul uses that in 1 Corinthians 2, and he's talking about something else. But anyway, all right, so there was a brilliance there on the mountain. Number four. We've already said that, haven't we? His face changed and his clothes. Number five, who appeared and spoke with Jesus? We already said that? Okay, we said who the guys were there, but it didn't mention that they were speaking with Jesus. So six, about what did they speak to Jesus? His departure? Okay. Luke 9, verse, is that 31? What is, I can't read my own handwriting. I believe that's Luke 9, 31. Okay. Both Mark and Luke, are found, the account is found in the 9th chapter. I was, the reason I was questioning that is because I put there they spoke of his death, but it'd be the same conclusion. But I can't even get to Luke. Okay, 9:31, Luke 9:31, well, verse 30, it says, "And behold, there talked with him two men who were Moses and Elijah, who appeared in glory and spake of his decease, which he was about to accomplish in Jerusalem." There is a footnote in my version that says departure, decease or departure. So there is a question as to, spoke to him about his death or his departure. Ted? Up with Jesus, so they'd know that that was he. Do we know, or do we not know whether they knew it was Moses and Elijah? Okay, that's what I was asking. Did Peter name them by name? Okay, so somehow or other, Jesus showed them a picture as they were going up. Here's Moses and Elijah. All right. Yeah, we don't know how they knew that. I'm sorry? Well, it's possible. It doesn't say that you told him, but that's a possibility. Let's see. Number 7, what did Peter suggest should be done? We just mentioned this, but let's look into it. Build a what? Build a tabernacle. Question 8 says, what is a tabernacle? A tent? And what was the tent for? Say that again.
Shelter.
The reason we think of it as a place of worship, that might have been what Peter had in mind, but tabernacle is just a simple term that meant a shelter. The Feast of the Tabernacles was a feast of the Jews. And what was it? Some old versions call it booth. A booth in which they got out of the sun, whatever. Now, Mitch is right in the sense that when the people came through from Egyptian bondage, and they came out there by Mount Sinai and so on, God gave them instructions to build what is usually called the tabernacle. And that's simply a tent. It's a shelter for the Ark of the Covenant, the showbread, and the lampstands and so on. And so that's where the idea of a place of worship comes from, and it's the proper idea with that. Mo? A tent of meeting. And that's probably a better term than tabernacle for us today. I was trying to remember. Anybody ever been to the Grand Ole Opry House in Nashville at the Ryman Auditorium? That was called a tabernacle at one time. And it was called that because that was a place where religious meetings were held. And go ahead, Mo. Yeah, I have too, yeah. That's a huge place too, where they get in there and... Yeah. They have a tabernacle and a temple both there. Anyway, it's a simple term, but probably in English it throws us off, and, but it might know a lot of difference. Build a tabernacle, build a shelter. Peter says, let's, we're going to stay here a while with these guys. Any other thought you might think as to why he said that? We'll get something later, maybe. What happened while Peter was making this suggestion? Okay. I was thinking that a little later I was going to say more about Peter, but let's connect it with this. Peter says, impetuous Peter, let's build a tent for these two guys, and he's interrupted. Mo?
Yeah, he wanted to build two tents.
Right.
One for each. Jesus,
right. I guess Peter, James, and John would just stay outside.
Yeah, stay outside.
But these are special men here to Peter, so. Anyway, so, but the important thing is, the cloud overshadows them. God appears in a cloud a lot of times. But anyway, a cloud overshadows them, and as Joe read there, the voice said, "This is my beloved Son, in whom I'm well pleased." Any more? Listen to him, okay? And maybe we'll come back to that thought, but that's an important statement here. Patrick, I heard a voice from that direction.
You think of Peter putting the other people on the
That could be. And they were very important, but we're going to see the difference. Remember that, what Kramer said, what Patrick said there. If it's a tabernacle or a tent for all three, then he's putting Jesus on par with Moses, but hold that thought in your mind. Ted, and I saw another hand. Okay, this is a fulfillment. All right, I want to enlarge on that as well. Joe? Okay. Okay, let's get that passage again. What reference? In Mark 9. All right. There's explaining Peter's mental state, shall we say. He didn't know what to say, is the way I'd say it. Does it say, your version say he was terrified? Okay. They were afraid, yes. I admit that I think I had... What was that, Mo? Okay, after the voice spoke. Okay, that's number 11. What did the apostles do in the cloud? They fell on their face, very afraid. Matthew 17, verse 6 was that. I'm trying to hold those two thoughts that in my mind, so don't let me forget. What happened to the visitors at this instance? They were gone. The visitors meaning... Moses and Elijah, okay. How did the three apostles feel about that? What? There's a typographical error there, isn't there? What they saw instead of what they say. They were afraid. They were frightened. What did Jesus say to them? Don't be afraid. What did Jesus command on their way down the mountain?
Don't
tell this to no one until after the resurrection. Matthew 9, verse 9 to 10. Okay. A couple of those comments we'll get here in the questions for thought. And that's really what I want to get to. Anything else about those questions for review? Did we kind of get the scene before us? What was said? What was done? That was the purpose of those questions for review. Explain the divine statement, "This is my beloved Son in whom I'm well pleased, hear him." Yeah, what? Kelly said, what is there to explain? It's hardly, it's a pretty clear statement. In contrast, what was the significance? What significance is there, number two, in the presence of Moses, Elijah and Moses with Jesus on the mountain? Mo? Okay, that's good, and there's more than that. I think Kay has the right idea. Everybody heard her, huh? I know, I'm just kidding. In reference to the comment that was made that Peter was making Jesus on par with Moses and Elijah, he didn't understand, but is there any significance in that in connection with this, "This is my beloved Son whom I well please, hear him"? Okay. All right, that's included. Okay, you're getting at it. That's part. Yeah. More to come in the future. Go ahead.
Well, Moses had said there'd be a prophet after him.
Deuteronomy. Moses had said, let's see, did I have that scripture or is it here anywhere? Yeah, I thought it was. Yeah, Deuteronomy 18 up there at the top. Prophets will be raised up like unto me. Acts, the third chapter, also, where Peter quoted it. Listen to him, Moses said. So, let me sum this up and tell me if we're thinking correctly here. Moses and Elijah representing the law that was given, Elijah representing the prophets. That summarizes in two words, if you will, the Old Testament, as we call it. Moses and the prophets, the law and the prophets. If God says, "Hear Jesus," what is he, and you've already said it, what is he saying then but that you don't listen to Moses and the prophets anymore? I'm asking you, if I make that statement, am I correct in it? Not that that Moses and Elijah were wrong in anything they said. You listen to, as Peter said in Acts 3, you listen to them that they said, "There's one who is coming like me." You listen to him. So the old law, as we call it, the prophets, so far as what they said was all true, but so far as what is binding, shall I call it that? Better word. That will no longer be, you take, listen to this guy that's going to speak, that they told you to listen to. Mo? They didn't recognize that. They didn't understand that John the Immerser was the one that would come in the power and likeness of Elijah. They may have been looking for the actual man Elijah rising from the dead or whatever, but they missed it. Mo? Right. Okay. There's a difference in the two, and we've got up there under the Bible readings, we've got Elijah translated. I'll talk about that so I don't forget as to why he's including here that on the sheet. So. Number three, maybe what we have been talking about, let's look at it. What is the significance of their being absent immediately following the voice? I'm not sure that we have to assume something there. Am I right in that? But is there an implication, maybe? After the voice, Moses and Elijah, they're gone. Mo, did you have something? It is a vision, yes. I meant to.
And that may have woke him up.
Okay.
The fact that the voice out of heaven shocked him or took him out of that.
Okay, so what we're seeing here in this slide, if you can see it at all, Peter, James, and John are down here on the left-hand corner. So they're seeing this, but it's a vision. We'll go into all the details about a vision, but a vision is not what, I mean, you're not a vision as I look at you, right?
No, but Jesus was talking to
him. Jesus was talking to him.
So that was happening.
Did people talk in visions?
They're talking to each other.
Did they do that in visions? Daniel, Abraham. Every time you see someone's in a vision, doesn't mean it wasn't real, but it doesn't mean that it's necessarily like flesh and blood with you and me either. Not unless they were raised from the dead. Anyway, Patrick, Ben Moore. If there is any significance, and immediately number three, of their being absent immediately, if there's any significance in that, then it indicates the law and the prophets will no longer to be listened to so far as being followed, because Jesus is going to fulfill everything they said, and as we quoted from Peter in Acts, the third chapter. That is true, but I don't know if the statement, what is the significance of them being absent immediately following the voice? What we just said, is that more than just an assumption? We're assuming that? I don't want to make a big deal out of it, but it didn't say they left because of now Jesus. Are we making more out of the making it significant of their meeting, leaving immediately after hearing the voice? Whether they were taken away or left on their own, they left immediately. That's true, that they left immediately. But the significance of their being absent immediately after following the voice, what is that, is the question here. And I'm not sure that we can just say definitively that that's the reason. You get what I'm saying? It is that they're to listen to Jesus and not those two guys. But I'm just saying, to me, and I'm always that way, I guess, if it doesn't say that's why, then we're assuming. It's a good assumption, maybe? All right, let's go on. What did Peter inadvertently do by offering to build all three tabernacles? That's true. Maybe all on the same level. And this is another question that I'm not sure we can have a definitive answer, because it doesn't say. Maybe. Most says all three to be worshipped. That's the least assumption I'd make. Listen, keep the law and the prophets. Is that maybe another thought in Peter's mind? This is one I'm going to say. We don't know. Mary? What did Peter inadvertently do by offering to build all three men tabernacles? Keep the law. They didn't understand, that's an assumption. They did not understand that the law was not to be kept. All right. Those two questions that I don't know if. Okay.
Or he may have done something in the room you think it used to be. In any case, you still needed to find fulfillment of the promised glory prior to suffering to be the same.
So, go ahead, Terry. That's the whole conclusion we ought to get from the study of this transfiguration, is what Terry said, is that it is Jesus that you're to listen to. That's what God said. And if you didn't hear all what Terry said, part of it was that, and we've kind of gone over it a little bit, is that Moses and Elijah were held very high regard, shall we say, by the Jewish people, a lawgiver and the prophet. Moses represented all the law, of course. He was the one through which the Old Testament law came, and Elijah represents the prophets who were to be listened to, if they were true prophets, of course, and so have very high regard. But the point of the transfiguration is to hear what God said. This is my beloved Son, hear him. Kramer. Yeah, go ahead, Terry.
Well, John the Baptist,
Yeah. That's a good point, and what Terry is saying is that John the Immerser came in the power of Elijah, came in the semblance of Elijah, and Jesus said, this was the Elijah that we talked about, et cetera, et cetera. And John said, I'm not even worthy to untie the sandals of the fellow that's coming after me. Behold, the Lamb of God. That was John pointing to Jesus and saying that. And so he was telling his own disciples who followed him, John did, you don't listen to me any longer after there's the guy you listen to. And that's really the number five here, what purpose did the transfiguration show? And I think that's the kernel of the matter, whether you get anything else about all these other details we talked about, that the transfiguration. And I'm not saying there's not other details that are important. I'm just saying that's, I think, what is the essence of the transfiguration. Okay? We're going to look at, what have I got here? What's the next one? 18. Jesus goes to Jerusalem. That's the next. Take one and give them one out there, and I may run out of this. Over. Jesus goes to Jerusalem, and lesson 18 is the next one. Anything else? I appreciate your thoughts and questions, Kramer. Okay. Peter, did I get it right, Kramer, that Peter was very impressed about this? Okay. Probably James and John were too, but we know who did the speaking. Okay. We're getting on to the time in lesson 19, where Jesus goes to Jerusalem. And a lot of interesting things happened there.
18.
Did I say 8, 19?
Yes.
I meant 18. I said 19 because we're not even going to look at 19. All right, thank you.